It's Monday. I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's the Gab and Jules Show. We have a packed show to you for you because Inter, the first side to become champions in the Big Five. Who'd have thought? You're watching it on TV on Sunday. And then Dortmund advancing. Tight race in La Liga. Tight race in Ligue 1. But we have to start extraordinary scenes at Old Trafford. The match between Manchester United and Liverpool postponed. I don't remember the last time this happened because of issues due to crowd disturbances, especially with a closed stadium. Jules, you were there. Give us a rundown.
Yeah, we knew there was going to be a protest in front of the stadium with some fans against the Glazers, like they did at the training ground a few days before. And we saw around 1,000 fans in front of the stadium first, and then some of those fans managed to break into the stadium twice, different groups, different times, invaded the pitch, tried to go into the dressing room, into the bubble, the closed bubble, and then we saw them exiting the stadium through the Munich tunnel and then the back of Old Trafford, and then almost blocking the gate as if they didn't want the coaches to arrive. At the same time, at the Lorry Hotel, where the United players have stayed, like they always stay before a game, you had more fans there, around 200, maybe 300, who were also protesting there. And in the end, there was a feeling on the ground at the stadium, and I'm sure Ogi would agree, that it looked like the game would not happen. And we were waiting to hear from the Premier League and people there. We saw Michael Oliver not being allowed to come into the stadium. Mark was also waiting outside because they didn't let anyone in because of the protest. And it was just unreal. It was crazy stuff like I'd never seen before.
Mark, you were there too, of course. Mark Ogden joins us. Can you just give us a quick rundown? Because it seems like we have anger over the Super League, anger the fact that United, probably the club that needs a Super League least out of all of them. And the Glazers, they went ahead with this. Obviously, there was a fiasco there. But the Glazers are already very unpopular. From the fans, can you just talk about how those two elements come together?
Yeah, so obviously the Glazers have owned Man United since 2005. And right from the outset, the fans were opposed to the takeover. It was a takeover that put the club into big amounts of debt, over £500 million at the time. And from that point on, the fans and the Glazers have been, you know, sworn enemies, I guess. And what happened with the Super League was just, I guess it was the reopening of an old wound, a wound that's never really healed, but that gave the fans the energy and the kind of the unity, I guess, as a collective to protest again, as we saw at the training ground last week. And it's just reignited the anger towards the Glazers, because ultimately the United fans believe that United is a club that makes a lot of money. It does make a lot of money, and it doesn't see the fruits of that on the pitch or at the stadium, which is, as we discussed before, the stadium's looking old. But the Glazers take a lot of money out year on year.
Sorry, I just want to explain that for people who don't understand it, because we're kind of so close to it, we take this for granted. Just what the Glazers did, it was a leverage buyout. They borrowed a load of money to buy the club, and then rather than paying the money back themselves, they took money out of the club, essentially shifting the debt onto Manchester United, United that had been debt-free since 1931, I believe. They could do that because United have been perennially profitable and are still, COVID aside, perennially profitable. And every year, of course, when you have a large debt, you have to service it. Every year you have to make interest payments. So they take a chunk out of the profits that United make and go and service that debt. And on top of that, they also take dividends and whatnot. And it's been estimated, Mark, that it's more than, it's well over $1 billion, well over £1 billion, in fact, approaching $1.5 billion that have gone out in the last 15 years, Mark. That's pretty much it, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So the Man United fans are basically, well, certainly Man United are paying for the privilege of having the Glazers as the owners, in the sense that, you know, they probably take about between £70 to £100 million out every year. So the fans ultimately are boiling down to that they feel that the club is just there purely to service the financial needs of the Glazers. It's not there, that there's no sense of the club needing to be the best in its class, in terms of everything must be designed to make the club win. Everything is designed to make the club earn money for the Glazers, and that's the difference between across town Manchester City, where everything is done for the sake of the team to win and the owner puts money in. So it's rooted in that, but the Super League was the that just sort of lid off the simmering resentment of the fans.
We're going to get into that more. I also get the sense that, and I want to get your, if we can, both your views on this, the Super League obviously generated a whole backlash. There's protests, 50+1, government reviews. I was struck by something Andy Burnham, the mayor of Manchester, said afterwards. And again, those were his policemen. The two policemen were injured. You know, that was his police out there dealing with this, saying that you obviously have to condemn violence, but you know, we can't lose sight of what the real issue is, which is the people at the top, presumably referring to the Glazers. Is there a different mood now that makes you more hopeful that something can be done to avoid these situations in the future, or perhaps limit the way the Glazers operate?
I really don't see any change, Gab. Ultimately, the club is worth £3 billion, and to even happen to sell half of that, it's going to cost £1.5 billion. Who's going to pay for it? The taxpayer? Are the government going to force them to sell? I think the ship has sailed. All of England's big clubs are now owned by, you know, very, very wealthy foreign owners, and they have no desire to sell, no need to sell. I don't think the Glazers will be too concerned by this. They're well insulated by the fact that they live in the US. I just think that, I think in many ways as well, I think that the real reason for the fans' disharmony is obviously is the financial side of it, but I think it's also about mismanagement. The Glazers have spent a lot of money, or the club have spent a lot of money. Only Man City have spent more than Man United since Alex Ferguson retired. It's just been badly spent. They've made bad appointments, bad managerial appointments, bad executive appointments. They've managed the club very
badly. But that's not the Glazers, right? That's not
the Glazers, because they make the appointments. They've hired Ed Woodward to run the club. They've hired Jose Mourinho. They hired Louis van Gaal when he was well past his best as a club manager.
See, this is where performance on the pitch, because like we're going to get into this a lot more. The fact that the results have been so disappointing since Sir Alex left, I think the two things get conflated. A cynic would say, well, you wouldn't be complaining about the Glazers if you'd had the same success that, you know, in the last 8 years that you had in the 8 years before the Glazers arrived.
Yeah.
I don't buy that. Maybe I'm a little...
No, that's not true, because...
Too much of a
because
fan.
Because the green and gold process famously happened during 2010.
There's a case to be made that part of the reason the green and gold protest perhaps failed was that simply... It was Sir Alex Ferguson's final years. Nobody kind of wanted to disrupt that.
Yeah.
And the team ultimately was successful. But it's a different climate now.
It is a different climate. I do think that if United were still winning and winning big titles, having the best players in the world like they used to, this protest certainly would be much lesser, or even maybe not happening at all. And I know in 2010, I mean, even in 05 when they just bought the club, and in 2010 there was a lot of protest when the team were pretty much at the peak. But maybe back then you were already feeling that things were not looking good down the years for Manchester United. And you were right. Just imagine, if you were 15 when the Glazers bought the club in 05, right? You've seen all unfold. You were going to Old Trafford. It was great. You'd been winning. All your family was United fans. And now for the last 15, now you're 30 years old. And for the last 15 years, or let's say 10 years, 11 years, you've seen your club just going downhill. How does that make you feel right now? On the top of that, you've got the Super League. On top of that, you've got, as we've been saying, the stadium that nothing is done with. The training ground. You don't buy the best players anymore. It's actually the team across the city that... He's spending the money buying the best player. You must be so angry. Right. And you've done nothing for 11 years in terms of protesting, really. Because that protest after 2010 just went quiet. And I think now you must feel that, okay, we've got the right to show again how unhappy we've been for the last 15 years.
So, Mark, I want to get your view on this. Because part of me, when I try to look at this from kind of an ethical standpoint, the fact that the Glazers have made mistakes shouldn't matter. Because... You know, they presumably, you know, they had Woodward there, they appointed Mourinho, whatever they did because they thought they wanted to put out a successful football club, because it's in their interest to do that, right? So it's not like they made those choices because they said, we want to screw up United. So I don't think it's fair to have a go at them within the context of the way they financially look
in
at the run.
In that sense, I agree.
Right? But it does come into it a little bit, right? Because there are a certain number of fans among United, like at any club, they really don't care how their owners make their money or run their club if the team is successful. I mean, is that fair to say that those people exist at every club?
Absolutely. And I'd imagine that there's maybe a 10% minority of United fans that will always agitate against the owners for their reasons. I mean, you have to take a deep breath in this because there are so many elements to it. You know, there's so many elements to it in terms of the ground has not been touched. They don't invest in the ground. They do it, but this is the paradox is they have spent a lot of money on the team. I think over £740 million net spend since Ferguson left, which is second only to Man City. But they've spent it badly. And I think what the Glazers have done is that whether they care enough to appoint the best, they've appointed people who don't know what they're doing, basically. Ed Woodward was a bad appointment to replace David Gill. Louis van Gaal was a bad appointment. David Moyes was a bad appointment. And within that, the people who've signed players haven't had the necessary knowledge to spend that money wisely. So the money's been spent, but it's been wasted. But let's go back to, I think that this really started in 2009 when Cristiano Ronaldo was sold, £80 million record fee. Carlos Tevez left that summer as well. And from that point on, United have never been close to where they were. Tevez and Ronaldo went and they brought in Antonio Valencia, Michael Owen on a free, Gabby Obertan. The following year, they signed people like Chris Smalling, Javier Hernandez. So Alex Ferguson at the time would say, we're not spending silly money because we want to find value in the market. At the same time, Man City was signing Yaya Toure, Sergio Aguero, James Milner, David Silva. Ferguson was criticising City for kamikaze spending, he called it. And the reality was that those deals they did were much better value than the cheap deals United did. So Ferguson, for me...
Sorry, on that point, and when in the end, just to back your point up, who did Sir Alex Ferguson sign to win the title? He signed Robin van Persie for what at the time was a huge amount of money, and he signed him to a long, very expensive contract, and he got a very good year out of him that won him the title, and then things went south from there. Is that fair, Mark?
Absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't say it was a vanity signing, but it was a signing designed to get the title back. You know, you'll notice at the same time, United were very close to signing Robert Lewandowski, who I think was at Borussia Dortmund at the time. But United felt that, or Ferguson felt that Van Persie was guaranteed there and then to score the goals. If they signed Lewandowski, you could argue he was a much better long-term investment. But, you know, I digress. The point on Ferguson is that throughout the first few years of the Glazer ownership, you could argue that he kept the club afloat and kept them being successful. But also, he also kept the Glazers in the club because he would always defend the Glazers, say what good owners they were, how they always backed him in the market. Now, if that's the case, why was he signing such inferior players when he could have signed much better players? When they saw Ronaldo, why did he allow the club to only sign Antonio Valencia, Michael and Gabby Obertan when he could have signed much better players than that? And you know, there was also a lot of resentment amongst maybe a minority United fans towards Ferguson because they blamed Ferguson ultimately for the Glazers coming in because, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson had this disagreement with the owners of the Rock of Gibraltar Racehorse, McNeil McManus, who was shareholders at the time. They sold their shares ultimately to the Glazers. So Ferguson's ride with the owners of the Racehorse, in the eyes of many United fans, led to the Glazers buying the club off the stock market. So
I want to be clear on this because, again, people are listening to us from all over the from all around the world. And obviously, you basically live at Old Trafford. But, you know, Jules and I have also followed the story all along. What you're saying is that, obviously, Sir Alex Ferguson, untouchable legend for United. There is a portion of the United support that say, well, you know what? Sir Alex, maybe involuntarily, helped create the situation where Cubic Expressions, I think they were called, Magner and McManus, decided to sell the club just to get out, took the Glazers' money, and then it's almost like he didn't make a stand against them. He kind of appeased them, even as David Beckham, of all people, was in 2010 going there with AC Milan, picking up the green and gold shirt, speaking out quite eloquently about the Glazers, no backing from Sir Alex. Is there a sense that if Sir Alex had made a stand there, in whatever way, things might have turned out differently?
Yeah, at the time, Sir Alex, as we know, was all-powerful at Man United. If he had suggested that the Glazers weren't doing the right things for the club, then it would have been very difficult for the Glazers to survive. If Sir Alex Ferguson had walked away in protest, then, you know, it would have been very difficult. But Sir Alex Ferguson remains on the payroll at Old Trafford as an ambassador. He has been ever since 2013, so he's still, you know, involved in the club. Whether he agrees with the Glazers or not, he's still involved in the club. Now, maybe it's a harsh view of history that to blame Sir Alex for what has happened, but his dispute with Cubic Expressions opened the door for this hostile takeover of the Glazers to buy up shares that are on the market to get to this situation. So the Glazers now own the club, and I don't see how anybody at any point in the future can afford to buy them out. So they're stuck with the United fans who are rebelling against them. The United fans are stuck with the Glazers because there's no obvious way for them to be bought out. There really isn't. I mean, the Spotify owner might be talking about buying Arsenal, great, but there's nobody talking about buying Man United.
Right, I'll get into that, but first, Jules.
No, I was going to say, that's the debate we had just before we started the show with Gab, because I agree with you, Mark. I don't think this protest, and it might be unfortunate, but I don't think this protest would change anything. I think the Glazers were maybe watching on television in Florida or wherever they are and thinking, like, what is this? Because there's a sense as well that those fans... hampered their own team. You know, their own players wanted to play that game. This is the biggest game in English football.
You know what? But honestly, can I say something about the players here? And obviously, we're all here for the players. There's what it's all about.
Yeah.
But when I was watching on television and you had three legendary in this country on Sky, and you had three legendary ex-players, you know, I think it was Roy Keane, Souness, somebody else. None of these people are fans. None of these people, I mean, the closest you had to fans were when we had Neville and Carragher, and they said very different things. What I'm driving at is, frankly, if you're a United player, okay, and I'm just want to make it simple, oh, you're a millionaire many times over, whatever. Don't feed me the line. We really wanted to play this game. The fans ruined it for us. I don't want to hear it.
I'm saying that your protest preventing your own players from playing a game that was a very important game.
To what? To United? Oh, it's really important. How is this important?
To the players. What? You think the players didn't care if they played or not that game on Sunday afternoon? Of course they wanted to play.
I would hope that every single United player, I would hope, understands that whatever inconvenience happened to them because of this, because they'll have to wedge it in, especially in a season when they know they're going to finish second regardless, right? I would hope every single one says, what is out there is the people who are paying our wages, the fans are making their voice. 100%. That is far more important. I would much rather sit here in my suite in the Lowry and watch this on TV.
Of course it is. But you know what? Had that game been played and Paul Pogba or Marcus Rashford come after the game and say, we did that for the fans. We beat Liverpool 3-0 in the biggest game of the season for the fans. The fans who protested in front of the stadium before the game. We've heard them. We've heard their voice. We know they disagree with the Glazers. We're here for them. That would have been far more powerful than the guys invading the pitch, trying to get into the dressing room and get that game postponed.
Yeah, I don't think anybody is justifying that. But I will tell you this. I think the mood in general has changed. We had a whole summer last year. The summer of reckoning, obviously that is to do with racial issues and policing. Obviously, in many ways, it's different. But in many ways, I think the climate has changed. I think there is more room for direct action than there is before. People are a little more tolerant of this. Nobody tolerates violence. Let's get that out of the way.
Yeah.
But let me give you a scenario. I know the season's almost over. It's only so much you can do. What if every United game from here to the end of the season, there's 200 people go and have a sit-in outside the Lowry? And every game, the police have to show up and whatever. At some point, the police are going to say, I'm going to get annoyed here about having to physically remove people, right? There have been, obviously, you're not going to stage a walkout because the stadium's closed anyway, right? But there are things you can do in terms of civil disobedience to turn the screws on the club, if that is what fans want. And I think the climate, especially from politicians and from the media, is different to what it was. It's different from this, well, just get on with it, you're ruining it for everybody. I think there's a lot of people who are pent up and have had enough.
Maybe you're right, but you can't get into, and Mark made the point on the FC show on Sunday night, what happens then in the next Newcastle game against Mike Ashley or the next Arsenal game? Are they going to try to get in and break into their own stadium and invade the pitch and get that game postponed or cancelled? What happens when the fans are supposed to come back in the ground? Are they going to come back now for the last two games of the season? I'm not sure.
Well,
what happens if they come back and you've got more troubles?
Well, I mean, this is the point, because there are other clubs with issues against their owners, and if it does escalate to the point where you have Arsenal, Newcastle, other clubs, Man United, this happens all the time, then I'd imagine the government will get involved at some point. But ultimately, what can they do? What can they say to the owners? Can they say, let's be good boys now, make sure you spend a bit more money? They're not going to do it. They can't force.
No, but it's not about spending more money. Okay, so there are...
To make the fans happy, but how can they make the fans happy?
Okay, but Mark, I'll try to answer your question, right? If you want to talk what the fans are asking about, I don't think 50+1 is realistic in this country.
I
agree.
Especially not with
a conservative government. However, there are other things that can be done. You can go and you can impose stricter financial oversight to say that, you know what, if you're carrying this much debt and you're profitable every year in certain circumstances, your first priority has to be to pay down the debt. Because you talk about, you know, the Glazers, in their own apology, said, well, we did this, we explored the Super League project to try to create a more stable, secure future, right? Well, the reason clubs are unstable is they have debt that they can service now and might not be able to service when times are tough, right?
Yeah.
So that is something that you can do. You can talk about fan ownership. You can also create a climate where these people just don't want to be there. You do it peacefully, you do it through civil disobedience. But this is what in the past has brought about change. And, you know, I just think the situation is different. And what you said before about, oh, nobody can afford to buy it because it's too expensive, it's $3 billion or whatever the market cap is right now, I don't think that's right. So I think what you need to look at is very simply is how much money, how much, obviously you look at how much it would cost to buy it, and maybe there's not an individual with $3 billion in his pocket, but this is a club that's listed on the stock exchange. You can put together, you could hypothetically put together private equity groups who would simply look at it and say, does this club make money? Yes, it does. It makes money every single year by this last one when likely we'll register a loss. Okay, what kind of return do we get on our investment? That's what these people look at. It doesn't take one rich guy with $3 billion in his pocket.
I know,
right?
But Gab, it's still $2.5 billion. It's not $850 million like Milan or even the $700 million that the Glazers bought it for 15 years ago. $2.5 billion. Right. It's a huge amount of money.
If you're getting, but it's very simple. It doesn't matter how much it is. It's simply down to return on investment. How much, if you have access to $2.5 billion and you park it and you park it in treasury bills or on your bank account, you're going to get a return of 0.5% or whatever. If you put it in the stock market, you'll get a much higher return right now because of quantitative easing and all the other boring stuff. But realistically, you know, you're going to want an asset that's going to that's going to withstand inflation. Football clubs have tended to do that. So, you know, it's a numbers game.
Yeah.
But the reason the Glazers hang on to it isn't because they're running a charity, because they like the rental situation, the rental income that they're getting from it. But the minute the Glazers think, you know what, we can make more money doing something else and it's not worth the headache, but the Glazers would be prepared
headache?
To sell.
What's the headache for the Glazers? What headache?
Well, one of the headaches, for example, is... One of the pro-Glazer arguments that you could say is, thanks to the Glazers' expertise and Ed Woodward, we've tripled our revenues, or nearly tripled our revenues, in the 13 years leading up to pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
That's great. Other clubs have 4x'd or 5x'd their revenues, right? Barcelona have nearly 4x'd their revenues.
Okay, so the headache
could be, Have we made as much as we can out of this club? Are we better now? Better off now cashing out? Is it going to be more difficult for us?
They would think they made enough and that the club won't continue to grow their revenue. But then someone will pay $3 billion for the same club when some of the ruthless businessmen in the world thinking that we can't make more out of this club, but yet someone is going to pay $3 billion to buy that club when clearly... The structure.
It happens all the time. Somebody thinks they can do a better job, make better decisions.
I don't know.
But guys, listen. I mean, the thing is, you're saying all this about somebody can make more money out of it, but if they buy Man United, they're buying a club with, as we've seen, a very agitated and rebellious group of fans. So as soon as they make a false step, they're going to get the heat on them as a Glazer game.
Does anybody want to?
Yeah, but not every owner has got the club's interest at heart. If they want to buy the club to make more money, then they will antagonise the fans and create the situation we had yesterday where, you know, what will happen now, this will be a repeat of the Green and Gold. Sponsors will be targeted. United's big commercial partners will be targeted. It'll be uncomfortable for them. And this is when it gets a bit difficult for the Glazers, because if their major sponsors are being targeted in their social media campaigns and they start pulling money out, that becomes difficult for the Glazers. But in terms of, are the Glazers making enough money out of the club? It's making about £100 million a year. It's a cash machine. And that will continue forever and a day. So,
which is why people are willing to buy it.
Okay, so let's say you find a buyer. Okay, it's a consortium of a lot of rich people. $3 billion. You need another half. You probably need £500 million to refurbish that stadium and do something with that stadium. You need maybe another...
£500 million, you can build a new stadium. Wembley up the road cost $1 billion and they built it from scratch.
This is a huge stadium that hasn't been touched for most of it for the last 30 years or something. I think 2010 is when the Stretford End was last refurbished. That's one stand out of the biggest stadium in this country apart from Wembley. So you need a lot of money, trust me, to refurbish everything. I mean, Augie and I are there every week. Trust me, it is not good.
It's like a haunted house. It's that old. It's so bad. And they haven't let it neglect. So like somebody made the point yesterday, it's neglected to the point where maybe the door locks didn't work properly yesterday. That's why the fans got in, because, you know, the roof's leaking, so maybe the doors aren't closing properly either. It needs a lot of money spending on it. And you're right, Gab. It might be better to build a new stadium. They've got so much land there, they could actually build a new stadium and make it the biggest stadium in England and make it the best stadium, you know, make Tottenham Stadium like Old Trafford now, but they won't do.
But my point was just, so on the top of those $3 billion, You would need so much more money after that. If you really want to make this club going back to where it belongs and where it was before, in terms of infrastructures, even for your own squad, you need money. You need so much money.
You're a cash positive business. By the way,
where are you going to find $500 million to refurbish your stadium? Not from the 100 million that you make every year.
Of course you will. Of course you will.
So that's more debt that then you will have to repay over the next 25. Do you see what I mean? What my point is, maybe
I think the perspective of fans saying, "Oh look, we've accumulated some. We're 500 million in debt because we've just built a spanking brand new stadium." And by the way, I don't believe it would cost you $500 million to refurbish Old Trafford. But whatever, I'm not an architect. But would be different if you say, "Oh look, we're $500 million in debt because we've improved the stadium, which will generate more revenue for us and whatever else, and a better match experience and all this stuff," than if, "Oh, look, we're $500 million in debt because we didn't want to put up our own money and we just chucked it onto the club."
No, you're right. It's not just buying the club for $3 billion. If you really want to bring this club back to the top, it's far more investment on the back of that as well. That might put people, really rich people, off buying the club if it was ever.
You're going the wrong way of thinking about rich people. We're talking at this point, anyone. I think a private equity group these people are going to crunch numbers. And I think there's a value in it.
It's the attitude and the mindset of Man United. So, you know, growing up and in my early years as a journalist, going to Old Trafford was always a sense of occasion because you knew that the club, prior to the Glazers, always wanted to be bigger and wanted to be better than everybody else. So they would buy the best players. They would make the stadium the best stadium. There was a real desire at United to be ahead of everybody else. And that stopped the day the Glazers came in 2005. They no longer have that mentality. It's no longer about this club has to be the biggest and the best. I think that's the attitude at Man City now. That's their attitude, and they spend, they've got different revenue streams, obviously. But United's attitude has changed completely. The attitude at United is to do enough to make the money continue to come in. I was told one year that the Glazers' ultimate business plan is for the club to finish second in everything, because they get all the money that comes with the prize money, but they don't have to pay the bonuses to the players that comes with winning. And that is a sad indictment of the Glazers' ownership of Man United. They want to finish second. I mean, finishing second right now is actually an improvement on what they've been recently.
I want to... Just to wrap this up, I think I'm right in saying I'm the only one who thinks that something can change here.
No, you but guys I'm are with the you. I,
grizzled,
I would like
cynical
to.
People
I,
here.
No, I would like it. But, I would like it to change. I'm just not sure it's that easy or
oh, I'm
that
not
it
saying,
would happen.
I don't think it's easy at all. I genuinely don't think it's easy. But I think when it comes to dealing with really, really large numbers, there is access to capital. And when you have a cash positive business like Manchester United, that's why it's so valuable, right? When the Elliott guys took over at Milan, they're losing enormous amounts of money. They know they have to put in a ton of money just to stay where they are before you have to go after. I mean, these guys, they lose 150 million every year on the club to try to fix the problems that are there. At United, from day one, other than your investment to buy the club, you would have money coming in. So it's not like you need to go and chuck enormous amounts of cash at it. There's already a ton of goodwill around Solskjaer. There are things like
maybe
that.
Maybe the hardest bit was for the club to be for sale. And that is probably the hardest thing because we don't think the Glazers will be ready for
several
that.
Glazers have sold their shares recently. Who knows? But Mark, I want to chuck it back to something else, which is a story that came out at the time, which I think, again, some listeners who aren't United fans might be unaware of it. Can you tell us what's going on with the other United in Manchester? Because as a result of the Glazer takeover, a bunch of United fans said, "All right, screw this. We've had it. The game's changed." These are really, I think, the old school romantics, the ones who want to pay a fiver to stand in the terrace and, you know, have some pints and whatever. And they formed this club called FC United, which over the years, for a while, they got a bunch of successive promotions. Then maybe they stalled. I don't know what level they're at or how they're doing. I'm told that they still get 3,000-4,000 fans a game, which I think for their whatever level they're at is higher than many League Two clubs. Can you give us a sense of that? And do you think, is there a scenario where those people might come back one day, or are they gone forever? Are they just sad nostalgics? Are they young people who follow FC United?
I think they're gone forever, and I think there'll be young people as well. The club's been in existence for 16 years now, so it'll be a blend of older fans and younger fans. But yeah, they built a stadium, got a nice new stadium now. They've got a stadium which is about 2 miles from the Etihad, ironically. It's United's old area in Newton Heath in Clayton. But the problem with FC United is that they reached a kind of a a limit, and they're, I think they're probably in the seventh or eighth tier of English football now. But this gets back to the heart of the whole fan ownership thing. The fans broke away to set the club up, and the fans who set the club up have all fell out, and they're no longer involved, and there's a real kind of boardroom battle between the fans who moved away to form this splinter club. So the warning there is that be careful what you wish for, because fan ownership of clubs might be seen as this utopian dream. But when fans turn the club, they all have their own opinions, and they end up falling out. So the FC United story is, it's quite a sad one in a way, because it was set up with the right intentions, but the people who set it up couldn't stick together. And, you know, I won't say it fell apart, but it kind of ran out of steam, to the sense that they haven't progressed to the point where they were hoping to do. I think they wanted to be a new AFC Wimbledon to set this Phoenix club up and get in the league, but that hasn't happened. But yes, they're a functioning club, that they get a decent fan base, but they're a non-league club. And, you know, the whole idea behind it, a fan-owned football club, great, but, you know, when fans fall out, they fall out, and that would happen at Man United. It's all right saying, have all these rich individuals, but somebody's got to be the boss. Ultimately, and the ones that aren't the boss will fall out.
All right, Mark. So Mark's basically saying there that fan ownership can never work, and that everybody should go and back the Glazers,
exactly,
and lay off
and
them.
Reach ownership.
And that they should help identify the people who broke in, right? And share their videos with the police and grasp them. No, I'm kidding. All right, let's watch this space and see what happens next. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Enough United, because Inter, la ben amata, the beloved, il Biscione, are the new champions of Italy, of Serie A. Yep. The first of the big, could have been touch and go with Manchester City.
Yep.
Had United lost that game, and said it's Inter, the first ones. Jose, this is their first. They've won zero silverware since the Coppa Italia in 2011. The last couple years, before the lockdown, they were averaging around 60,000 a game. I can't think of a bigger club that's gone a decade without winning silverware in Europe. I don't know if you can, right? First and foremost, with all the criticism of Conte, that's something to celebrate.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we said last season, didn't we, that they lost that title more than Juve won it, and they probably should have already won it. They lost it by 1 point, but that Conte was already doing a good job. They kept going in that direction, and I think they have been, we have to say, the best team in Serie A this season. You can always argue that at times they went old Conte and quite solid and defensive and playing a certain way, when maybe at the start of the season he tried to play a bit more attractive football, but sometimes got caught out and dropped some points late in games. But I think I like him a lot as a manager. I think everything is so structured. Every player knows what to do. You see the patterns of play, and it's true that outside of this positional football, maybe the lack of creativity is there sometimes. But I just think he's very serious, he's very solid, he's very efficient. And when you've got someone like Romelu Lukaku up front, who can boast, 22 goals and 10 assists or something like that, and find a partnership with Lautaro Martinez that will get all those goals, then you're on a very good path, especially when the other big clubs in your league are misfiring in a way like Juventus this season. So well done to Conte and to the club. 11 years without a league title, it's a long, long time for a club like Inter.
Yeah, and there are concerns about the future, negative ones. But, you know, I think we'll get into those. Now I just want to kind of look at the positives. There are people who are going to say that, well, if they hadn't finished last in the Champions League group and been knocked entirely out of Europe, they wouldn't have won the title. That's nonsense, isn't it? They would have still won the title.
I still think they would have won the title. Actually, I think that could have given them even more momentum and even more strength collectively and even individually. You know, do well in Europe. I think that gives you a lot of confidence to go and then into your league. Okay, it could be tiring, but they've got kind of a big squad enough to be able to compete and do things.
Plus, so the way Italian clubs are going, it probably wouldn't have lasted very long.
Yeah, exactly.
In Europe.
Were you impressed? Have you been impressed?
Okay, so the things that have really impressed me is increasingly in my old age, yeah, I can appreciate tactical systems and confidence, but I love managers who improve players individually. Mm. Romelu Lukaku has improved individually. I think he's always been an intelligent player. He just wasn't asked to show it. Before it was just, hey, look, you're big and strong. Let's just lump the ball up to you. You run past everybody.
Yeah.
You know, the way he has embraced it, the way Conte got Christian Eriksen, and look, we hammered him because, you know, you broke balls to get to sign Eriksen and whatever, and then you don't use him and whatever. You say he's a wuss. In the end, he was humble enough to say, I need Eriksen.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it work. And the two of them together really, really worked. Ashraf Hakimi, I love the signing in the summer, has improved tremendously.
Yeah.
We said Conte doesn't trust kids. Well, Barella, inexperienced, not a winner in Conte speak. You know, he was a driving force of this midfield. For my money, the second most important player on the team after Lukaku. And at the back, also, a guy like Alessandro Bastoni, right? He's a kid, right? 21. We said Conte, oh, low, at the beginning, you know, cholera, this, that. I think that's the thing with Conte. He has his preconceptions, and some of them I think are pretty silly. But he's not afraid to go and change. You know, as the facts change, his opinions change. And that is a sign of intelligence.
Yeah.
One of the big things here is the fact that Conte himself, even leading up to it, you know, he's got a year left on his contract. He signed a three-year deal when he arrived. And he said, well, about the future, you know, we'll sit down with the club calmly, let's see, blah, blah, blah. It's code for I want assurances. And the cold, hard reality is that Inter can't really give him assurances.
So what kind of assurances do you think he's looking for? So Pepe Marotta will stay as well. So you think that duo, that partnership that has worked well for them, will be in there. So they can focus on who they can bring in, maybe. And is that what you mean by assurances? How much money would be available for transfers?
I think he's going to think that he, and I think rightly so, he's going to need two or three players to go and help the team challenge, help them play the way he wants them to play, which again, you know, we only saw in spurts in the first half of the season. The way they played in the second half of the season was the way he felt they needed to play. It's not the way he wants to play.
Yeah, yeah.
But the difficult thing is their parent company, Suning, Chinese retail conglomerate, they've said, we're going to focus on our core business. Chinese government, they're not under media pressure because the Chinese government said, hey, Suning, we think it would be a really good idea if you sold X amount of your shares to these two state private equity companies. Effectively, they become partners with the Chinese government. Yeah. When Chinese government taps you on the shoulder suggesting something, it's normally a bit more than a suggestion.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think Suning are in a position where they can just pump money in and lose it at this point. I don't think Inter is going to be part of Suning's core strategy going forward. So that's why Suning are looking for other investors, people who can be, so that Suning can maybe stay as minority partners. Mm. Or maybe even, you know, still retain the majority, but have somebody bring in fresh cash.
Yeah.
That's difficult. On top of that, there is these something like 220 or 250 million in bonds that mature in 2022, which they're going to need to refinance because they can't pay that money back if they don't refinance. And then on top of that, you still have an enormous squad, a huge wage bill. Yeah, there's no financial fair play right now, but there will be some form of financial fair play going forward where you're going to have to square the books. And that's where I think it becomes challenging. You need to sell Conte on the idea that, hey, Conte, you did a great job with these guys. Let's sell what we can sell. Get rid of who we can get rid of. People who don't play, Vecino, Cholera, whatever, say thank you. But we're going to have to replace them with kids, people from the youth team. You know, we have this young striker, Pinamonti, under 21 international. He's only played a few times. You don't seem to like him very much. All right, we either sell him, or if you need a body, you need him. Play him. Find out.
Do you think Conte will then sell out? Okay. I'm ready to take on this challenge and try to go and win another Scudetto and go and do better in the Champions League, because, you know, we said about them being knocked out of the Champions League. Had they done better the last two seasons in the Champions League, that would have brought more money to the club.
Exactly.
And, you know, the pandemic hit as well. But, or do you think he would be like, do you know what, I'm not sure of what this is going to look like for the next 2-3 years, so I'm out of this?
That's the really difficult choice. I think in Conte's favor is the fact that I don't think he wants to sit out again. I don't think he enjoys it when he goes and takes his sabbaticals
out. I agree.
And I don't know that there's an obvious club that is going after him. Yeah. You know, I don't think he's going to return to Juve. I think that's been mooted, but I mean, that would be the ultimate triple betrayal at this stage. I don't know that his rep outside of Italy is necessarily that high. He's not somebody that we can imagine it at Real Madrid or at Barcelona because of the style of play. So even those job openings that come up, I think Conte feels that he needs to go and win something important in Europe, where then all of a sudden jobs abroad, you know, big jobs abroad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Italian media linking him to Spurs today, you know. And I think it's all part of the dance that we play. I don't think Spurs are going for Conte and the other way around.
Because if you're Conte and you look at Serie A right now, and Juve are a mess, right? Napoli will probably change manager in the summer, and you don't know what likely to do. You don't know what's going to happen with the new manager. Sarri is going to Roma. Not sure they see Roma as a threat right now. Anyway, Milan, you could always argue that it's good, but there's always a bet with Milan. Atalanta are great, but it's still Atalanta, and they're a much smaller club. So potentially you could easily win the Scudetto for the next 2 years and make it 3 in a row and build something very special for you as Antonio Conte at that club. You've got the best striker in Serie A in Lukaku. You've got some really good young players, as you said, there and there. If you can keep Lautaro as well as Bastoni and Barella, and Sensi will come back to his best level, and that would be another, almost like a new player. So there's also a lot of optimism to balance with the negativity that you mentioned with Suning.
There is, and I think the interesting thing is a lot of times in these situations, the way you deal with it when you're a club like Inter, you're trying to get back to that highest echelon, right? What you might say is, okay, we're going to sacrifice a big player and we're going to reinvest the money. I'm not sure Inter can do that right now, partly because of the pandemic, of the way it is and the way market's going to be. In terms of their saleable assets, you've got Hakimi, you've got Bastoni, and you have Barella, right? Those three are the three guys that can fetch you a lot of money if you need it. Oh, and Lautaro. Yeah. But Lautaro's contract is winding down. Yeah. So you need to extend his contract. You're not going to get much money for him in these circumstances unless you extend it. I think that's what makes it very difficult. And I think Conte, rightly, is going to say, no. I need those three guys. I need those three guys because those guys are young and there's going to be part of the future. So it's a really interesting dynamic. Watch the space. I hope, as you know, look, I've been naive and optimistic. As you know, I was naive and optimistic about the United conversation. Yeah. I'm going to be naive and optimistic now.
Okay.
I'm imagining a more zen-like Conte who says, you know what? I have bled these guys as much as I can. I'm a really good coach. I'm a really good teacher. I can work with younger players. The old guys, bye-bye. This whole spirit of the warrior, they'll get that from me.
Yeah.
And if Barella can be a warrior at his young age and Bastoni can be a warrior at his young age, I'm going to make it work. I'll bring back Esposito, Piemonte. I don't know whoever these dudes are who are on loan all over. And they're going to be my supporting cast. My 11 is set. I can do something with them next season. And we'll take it from there. All right, enough Inter for now. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, guys.
With Toni Kroos and Luka Modric both being rested ahead of the Champions League return against Chelsea, took Real Madrid ages to finally score. But eventually they broke through against Osasuna. Jules, they're still in this.
Yeah, they are, Gab. It was
live to fight another day.
I know, they did indeed. It was not pretty. They only created something on set pieces, to be fair. Edin Militao could have had a hat-trick of headers.
He's looking good.
I mean, I never thought I would say that Edin Militao was Real Madrid's best player one day. But he was against Osasuna and scored the first goal, the most important one, and then Casemiro was lucky on his second one. But it's a win, and now they can focus on Chelsea.
Varane, though.
And on Sevilla. Varane.
We'll see. Maybe Sergio Ramos to come back. I think that's still up in the air.
Yeah, but again, injuries have really hit them this season anyway. Marcos Llorente scores and gives away a penalty late for Atletico Madrid away to Elche. But Gab, it worked out in the end somehow.
It worked out because the guy from Elche somehow like hit the ball against the post. Yeah.
Fidel.
I have to say, though, and we said this before, this was a good Atletico Madrid performance.
It
I know now at the end it's all about results, but you know this was a game where they actually played well and won and could have scored more.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it next week against Barcelona. Cool. It's going to be huge. And in fact, speaking of that, Barca had to come from behind to beat Valencia 3-2. They can go top next weekend. Yeah. Jules, how about that Messi penalty? Or you want to blame Messi for the Messi miss?
You know what? No.
The free kick, rather.
No, but last time, remember, he gave the penalty to Antoine Griezmann to score. Griezmann took it, scored it, and maybe he should have done the same against Valencia. The most important is the Messi-Griezzi partnership. They've scored the last 7 goals of Barcelona. They look really good with each other, assisting each other, creating for each other, scoring together. And I think that's very positive with this, the end of the season to come.
Super positive. Also, Frankie de Jong, I thought, another huge game. And on the penalty miss, did you notice who it was who somehow outruns everybody, keeps the ball back in play, and puts it back in for Messi to score? Sergio Busquets.
Yeah, that's right. I never saw him running so... Exactly, I never seen him running so quickly.
Unbelievable. Quick mind, Jules.
Yeah, Kai Havertz scores twice as Chelsea beat Fulham 2-0 on Saturday. Gab, how are they looking ahead of that big game against Real Madrid that we just mentioned?
This was the first game where all the big summer signings all started, apparently, this season. I had no idea. Timo Werner turned provider, which is good. Maybe he's better at that than finishing. But... Kai Havertz is a supremely gifted person. This whole world, he's a false
movement is fantastic.
The guy's sense of space is just tremendous. So maybe he is Chelsea's long-term center forward.
Maybe.
Paris Saint-Germain beat Lens 2-1 and are sweating on Mbappe for the semifinal return leg. Jules, Marquinhos scores another header. How are they looking? Kylian will be back,
Kylian will be back. They're very, very hopefully. Only trained on his own on Sunday, not with the rest of the team, but that was part of the plan. So they're hoping that he will be okay to go, even if he's not fully fit and 100%. He will be there for what is the biggest game of the season on Tuesday at City for them. But hey, they, as we said, they're still in that title race, still fighting, putting pressure on Lille. So we will see what happens then. Gab, events at Old Trafford meant that Manchester City had to wait to celebrate their title. They would have done it had Liverpool beaten United. But they beat Crystal Palace 2-0 on Saturday, and we can celebrate the final act of Sergio Aguero at City, right? With a goal. Lovely, great goal.
Who knows? Maybe he'll score in the Champions League final. But look, it was a good goal. I just love the way, you know, he kills it with one, scores with the other. Vintage Aguero. I have no idea if he can play at this level consistently anymore or what it means, but I do know that City fans certainly appreciate what he's brought to the club in the near decade that he's been there. Gareth Bale backs a hat-trick as Spurs beat up Sheffield United. Jules, was this too little, too late? Or would things have been different if we'd seen more of him earlier?
What, if he had played against Sheffield United every week?
I knew you were going with that. I knew you were going with that.
I'm sorry, Gareth. I don't know. I mean... You and I could have played and maybe scored against Sheffield United in that game. I mean, Spurs were good for Aaron Mason, two wins in those two league games. And for Gareth Bale, maybe he's thinking, let me finish on a high, or as high as possible. And
it's good news for Real Madrid, right?
It's good news for Real Madrid and for Zinedine Zidane, his favourite player ever. Sticking with Spurs, after being turned down by Julian Nagelsmann, who chose Bayern Munich, Erik ten Hag, who decided to stay at Ajax, and Brendan Rodgers, who did the same, they're now being linked to Rafa Benitez and Ralf Rangnick.
Okay, so I think whenever you've got an open, you have an opening on your bench, these two guys are always going to come into the mix. Because they put themselves forward, because others put themselves forward. And you always say, like, all right, Rafa Benitez. And then they're two different profiles, right? Ralf Rangnick, I get the man who created Julian Nagelsmann. And, you know, it's like I get the older, more German version of Julian Nagelsmann.
Yeah. And Tuchel, to an extent.
His contribution's been tremendous.
Yeah.
Rafa, hey, who doesn't love Rafa, right? Yeah. Rafa's been there, done that. I don't know that for where Spurs are now, either one is a good solution. If you bring in Ralf Rangnick, you got to give him the keys, Daniel, get out of the building.
That's not going to happen, right?
Not going to happen.
Okay.
If you bring in Rafa, I think you only go to a certain point, and then you either have to put more money in or Rafa starts being Rafa.
Yeah.
I don't know. Rafa Benitez would be a tremendous short-term solution if they're going to wait a couple years. If you're thinking long-term, I'm not sure. Cristiano Ronaldo scores twice in the last 10 minutes as Juventus are a bit fortunate, to say the least, to beat Udinese 2-1. Jules, some even say defeat would have cost Andrea Pirlo his job. This is not a good performance.
Not good at all. They were 1-0 down until the 83rd minute, and then Cristiano scored two goals, but they didn't play well again. They're lucky is that in the meantime, Napoli dropped points and Atalanta dropped points, and, you know, the others won. But
also so, very lucky that... The reason Cristiano scored a penalty because he's taking a free kick. Yeah. Rodrigo De Paul, who's been phenomenal, great player.
For Udinese.
He's standing at the end of the wall. He decides, oh, wait, why don't I jump? Why don't I make sure I put my arm out like this, basically vertical.
But do you think it's a reflex? Like you can't, a bit like Marcos Llorente against Elche, where in a sense that the ball is there.
You're a professional footballer, man. Don't do stupid things on reflex.
Milan beat Benevento 2-0 to relieve some pressure before their big game against Juventus next weekend. But Gab, the pressure is still on Donnarumma, who got a visit from the Ultra. Tries.
Yeah, this is a serious situation
it
because
is.
Obviously Donnarumma out of contract. There's an offer on the table. Donnarumma's agent is Mino Raiola. He was visited by Milan supporters at the training ground who said, listen, unless you sign the contract and commit to us, we strongly suggest that you not play that weekend. You not play against Juventus. And you know what? In some ways, I understand their point of view. I'm not going to impugn Donnarumma's integrity, but if he plays and he makes a mistake, even an honest mistake, and then he joins Juventus, it's not going to be a good look. And it's going to go and haunt him for the rest of his career. I think, look, we don't want fans intimidating players. And obviously, that's completely wrong. Mm. I think Paolo Maldini coming out and saying, we're freezing all contract negotiations from now on. I want Donnarumma to go out there, keep cool, play a great game, and... You know, maybe make it so that Juventus can't sign him because you beat them and they don't go in the Champions League.
Exactly.
That's got to be his mindset right now.
It should be.
Arsenal ring the changes and beat Newcastle. Jules, it's largely irrelevant to the table, but maybe some confidence ahead of the Europa League semi-final return leg against the much-loved Unai Emery?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, certainly a win... I mean, a defeat would have brought even more negativity going into that game on Thursday night. At least a win changes that a little bit, changes the mood, is good. I don't know how many of those starting 11 will start on Thursday, but it's a good goal for Aubameyang as well to score. It's a lovely goal too. And let's just hope that brings a bit of momentum going into that, why it's such a huge game on Thursday night that could pretty much almost save their season if they then go on and win this Europa League.
Nice to see a bit of Martinelli.
Yeah, as well. Borussia Dortmund beat up Holstein Kiel 5-0 to advance to the German Cup final, and they did it with Erling Haaland. Gab, they will face RB Leipzig, and they're ending the campaign quite well. Jadon Sancho.
Yeah, Gio Reyna also had a monster game, scoring two goals. Look, it can be really good if they qualify for the Champions League and Edin Terzic turns it around, setting the table for Marco Rose, and then they win the German Cup, or it can be really bad.
You
screw both of those up. Lose the final, miss out on the top four, then all of a sudden, welcome Rose.
Yeah.
Jurgen Klopp has issued a warning to the Dutch FA saying that taking Virgil van Dijk to the Euros might risk his career. Jules, you agree with Dr. Jurgen's diagnosis?
I don't know if that would risk his career. What I know is that you cannot bring someone to the Euros who hasn't played this season, who hasn't played since September or October, whenever he was out injured. You cannot take him and expect him to play those big games if the dude has not played since coming back from injury. It's okay to do training and run around the pitch. But
they've got games left, they've got friendlies.
Yeah, but what happens if they don't play those? You can't just play one friendly or two friendlies and then go straight into the Euros and risk that injuries. I think Klopp on this one is right. Gab, things are ending well for your boy Paolo Fonseca at Roma. And are they really turning into Mauricio Sarri for next season?
It certainly looks that way. Honestly, I think, look, if you get Napoli Sarri, that's great. But Rome is a special animal of a city. I think somebody with his communication skills in Rome is really, really going to struggle. They have a decent setup. I think it's a positive. I think the future is not negative.
Mm.
But man, Maurizio Sarri, I don't know about that one.
Yeah.
My man Burak Yilmaz does it again as Leo beat Nice to stay top. Really nice second goal too from Celik too. He just leathered the ball. Jules. Lille aren't going away. They're going to win this, aren't they?
I think it could all go down to the next weekend's game against Lens, the big North, the Derby du Nord, the North Derby. And Lens have to play. I mean, Nice didn't have to play for anything. And at the end, the Nice players were shaking hands, swapping shirts, saying, yeah, go and win this title. So, like, they were on holidays with the flip-flops. Lens, however, next weekend is a different animal because they need to win to keep in fifth place, which is amazing for them, being promoted. They got humiliated 4-0 in the reverse fixture earlier in the season. So they will want their revenge on
some
the
bad blood,
the,
huh?
Bad blood as well. So, but if they beat Lens, or if they're still top after the Lens game and PSG playing at the weekend as well, then I think they will go and win it. And it would be an amazing story for Lille and for Burak Yılmaz, who at 35, for his first ever experience away from Turkey, could deliver the title like this to a Mino like Lille. I think it would be amazing.
They should have a special Ballon d'Or type
thing. Yeah, you're right.
The Ballon Jewels or something.
You know, at the Oscars, they've got like Oscars for recognition or whatever
exactly,
it is.
Special,
you know,
achievement.
Yeah, exactly. Special achievement to Burak Yılmaz, Kral. Napoli are held to a 1-1 draw by Cagliari really late in the game. They scored an equaliser deep in injury time. Gab, was this the moment they said goodbye to the Champions League? I mean, it's unprofessional to concede like this.
This is not a good performance. My man, Victor Osimhen, putting him in the league.
Big,
well,
big.
No, I don't think the Champions League is over. I think they're still very, very much
definitely
in the race. A lot of big head-to-heads coming up with the other teams, but they do need to effectively run the table. A lot's going to depend also whether Lazio win their game in hand, because
I
mean, we said this before, it is five teams for three spots.
Yep.
Wild scenes at the end of Monaco against Lyon. Jules, the title won't be heading to the Principality, I'm afraid. And so Tony Parker was in the stands. What did he make of my man Pietro Pellegrini, the Italian giant, shouting? I could hear what he was saying.
Yeah,
he was quite angry. What happened? First of all, the game.
Yeah, the game was crazy. I mean,
all over the place.
Yeah, completely wild. Monaco took the lead and deservedly so. They've been so good this season, as we said, especially in 2021. Then Lyon came back. Then Lyon got a player sent off, Maxence Cacré, for two yellows. Then Lyon took the lead away from home.
Memphis with a deflected shot.
Yeah, and then Marcelo with the second goal. Then we think, okay, maybe can Lyon do this? Then Wissam Ben Yedder scores on a penalty in the 86th minute to make it 2-2. Wissam's 100th league and goal, by the way, great achievement to the Dragon Ball Z Kamehameha, big fan. And then as we think, okay, this is a draw. Is this going to be a draw, which wouldn't be good for either Monaco or Lyon? Then Ryan Cherki, the 17-year-old prodigy, comes out and scores
on,
the
who
winner.
Who came on as a substitute as
came
well.
Came on as a sub, scores the winner for Lyon. Incredible scenes then in the stands. Juninho, Olas, Tony Parker, who is a minority shareholder, but tipped as the successor to Jean-Michel Aulas at the helm of the club very soon.
This is Tony Parker, the basketball
player.
Yeah, this is major NBA crossover here.
Of course. And then, as you would expect, because it was such a big game for Monaco as well in the title race, and there's a lot of young players on that pitch, and you could see that the tension was there, and then things kicked off massively at the full-time whistle with a big fight. Players, Pellegrini, who I think had a beef with De Sciglio, the other Italian from the Lyon team.
Pellegrini really doesn't like De Sciglio. It's personal, and it goes way back.
Yeah, I think so too. But you wouldn't mess with Pellegrini, who was signed, you know, as a 16-year-old, who was already big.
Pellegrini's a man
mountain.
He's got it even bigger.
He's still only 19, but he's huge. It's incredible. Five red cards in total, four in that fight at the end.
Also getting sent off, just my own personal. Willem Goebbels, because, okay, I remember when he was signed, a ton of money.
Yeah,
is he a Paris boy as well?
Yeah, he is. And he's huge prospect. Well, he was at the time.
I think he's a Paris boy with a Dutch name. I don't know what his story is. But all those injuries, never plays. Is he good? Is he playing?
He's apparently amazing. But I think the injuries...
But nobody sees him.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody. He scored one goal. I think he had more red cards than goals for Monaco since he joined from Lyon, by the way, for 20 million 3 years ago. Yeah. Crazy stuff. Ajax lock up their 35 Eredivisie title. Gab, will they be raided by other clubs again and lose their stars like most summers?
Well, obviously, your boy Brian Brobbey, the refrigerator.
What about Gravenberch? Tell me Gravenberch can stay a little bit more. Mino will leave him there to keep his development.
Mino knows what he's doing. Mino's gonna scope things out, and he's gonna wait for next summer when prices go up.
Yeah.
Although, interestingly, FIFA have new transfer regulations coming into effect in September after this window, which are going to, supposedly they're gonna try to cap agent commissions. Now there's 101 ways around it, but I think that's gonna be an interesting twist if they're gonna enforce it seriously and do everything they've promised to do. But no, I think a lot of this team will stay together. I think, you know, maybe there's one or two guys other than Brobbey who they're gonna lose, but if I'm Ajax, I would say, you know, the way the market is, if I can just and Ten Hag saying, if I can say, all right, let's have another go at this. Let's take another shot. We did reach a Champions League semi-final a couple years ago. Let's have another go. Yeah. Why not? Borussia Dortmund sporting director Michael Zorc says there's a gentleman's agreement to let Jadon Sancho go in the summer, but there is no such agreement for Erling Haaland. Jules, it's nothing we didn't already know, no, right? He's in this again and again.
And
that doesn't repeating himself now.
Exactly. That doesn't mean that Jadon Sancho is going to leave, and that doesn't mean that Erling Haaland is going to stay either. You know, we don't know. No one might come with the money that Dortmund want for Sancho. People might come with a lot of money for Haaland, and they said, you know what, let's sell him now instead of waiting for the release clause next summer. You don't know. It's going to be a long summer. It could be a long saga again. But
well,
what
he also said, and this is this just trolls United fans. He also said, oh, why didn't Sancho move to United last summer? Because they didn't meet the asking price.
Exactly. Which, again, we knew.
we knew this, but it's nice to have somebody come out and say it so explicitly, you know, rather than have it filtered through Fabrizio Romano, the guy at Bild, Jan Åge Fjørtoft. This is actually the guy saying it.
Straight from the horse's mouth. Is that what you say in English?
Yeah, Zorc sounds more like an alien than a horse. But good for him.
And Gab, Women's Champions League semi-final second leg happened on Sunday, and Barcelona knocked PSG in what was a really good game. And then Chelsea came from behind against Bayern. It's a Chelsea-Barcelona final.
You follow the Women's Champions League much more closely. I'm guessing the Barcelona thing is really significant because, correct me if I'm wrong here, they've been dominating La Liga in Spain, insane goal difference and whatever, but you didn't quite know if they could actually follow up in Europe. Right, or if they were just
they lost the final
bullies
2 seasons ago, so they're going back to the final with I think a much mature, much better team. Jenny Hermoso is fantastic.
Lique Martin's a bit special too.
Yeah, scored 2 goals against PSG. The first one, very very nice one as well. And they got Graham Hansen, who's maybe certainly on those semi-finals the best player in all the ties. So it's a huge task. I think Chelsea would be the favourite, and Frank Kirby, who's having an amazing season, was fantastic against Bayern, but that's going to be a fantastic final.
Chelsea losing the first leg against Bayern, that was just a blip. They were always going to come back and beat them 4-1.
They're so good. You know, it's really, I know maybe of the listeners are not a huge women's football fan, but trust me, this is going to be a very, very good final.
Phil Neville rejects suggestions that he got an easy ride in getting the Inter Miami job just because his buddy David Beckham is part owner. In fact, he says the interview was as difficult as any other one he's ever had. Jules, do you believe him?
I don't. I wish I would, because I think that's the way it should be anywhere, whether the owner is your friend or not. But we've seen this before.
Yeah, you can say, I got the job on merit, leave me alone, and that's fine. I can respect that. But don't say that, like, oh, it was tougher than anything else. They really grilled me.
What I care more is that it's one win, one draw, and one defeat, which you could argue it's not bad, but could also be much better, so... I just want to see if he got it because he's the mate of the owner, but does a good job, in a way that softened the blow a little bit. But if he's rubbish and he's been picked because he's the mate, then that's a no. We're tapping this on Monday morning, Gab, and the 3-day social media blackout to stop online abuse is still ongoing as we're doing this until the end of today. Do you think that would be a success? What have you made of this weekend with no social media for a lot of us here in the UK?
I look at this and say, you know, like, will it be worth it? These kinds of blackouts and boycotts haven't worked in the past. I think it's a little bit different because there's a whole commercial element, not for us in the media so much, but for clubs and stuff. Like, if it brings people to the table and they come up with mechanisms to go and limit this, and there are mechanisms out there to do it, then I welcome it. Otherwise, I think the good thing that came out of it is we saw a lot of people participate and see that there is a willingness to do something, even if ultimately it doesn't work.
As always, the most important is what happened next, not so much what we did this weekend, which was great. It's what's going to be done now.
Right, well, that brings us to an end. But you know what? We got some big Champions League games. I know you want to come back on Thursday, don't you?
Yeah, especially if there's a big result on Tuesday night, you know. So.
There you go. All right, until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjewels, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjewels now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjewels.